Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to get to be together praising and worshiping God. And I first want to announce that tonight I'm going to be starting a new lesson series. Actually, it's going to be a really short series, probably just two lessons, maybe three. But it's on a topic that I've had questions about from several people over the years, and it's taken me a while to actually get to the point of where I actually had a time to really research this and do a couple lessons on it. It's a thing you might have actually thought about quite a bit. You might have never thought about it at all, but it is a question that comes up, and I think it's actually a really important question. It's how do we know that we have the correct books in our Bibles? If you've ever wondered that, if this is God's inspired word and it's made up of all these different books, how do we know if we have the right one? What if there's some extra books that should be in here, or maybe some of the books that are in here actually didn't come from God? All those questions, we're going to be dealing with that, really analytically, looking at the evidence, talking through how do we know. So we're going to do that starting tonight, and then in a couple weeks we'll hit it again and finish it out. So I hope you can be here tonight to really work through this. Maybe if you've struggled with it, or if you know other people who struggled with it, this will be a helpful lesson. All right, well today I'm going to be looking at some lessons in Jesus' life, and I appreciated the scripture reading that Mike did, particularly at the very end of that where he says, "If it is my will that you remain until I come, what is that to you? You follow me." I thought that was a really interesting thing that Jesus says. What is that to you? That's none of your business, Peter. If I want to do something different with him, then that's my prerogative, not yours, Peter. And I was thinking about this text, and I was thinking about the way that Peter, when Jesus talks to him, Peter says, "But what about this guy? What about this guy over here? What do you think about him?" This, I don't know if it's this deflecting kind of thing, but it's this just looking over his shoulder at, what about the other person? And so it got me thinking about this topic of the temptation to compare myself to somebody else. To think about their circumstance or who they are, what they do. And so I wanted to do a lesson about that, of fighting this temptation to compare myself to other people. Whether comparing myself to them in a positive way or in a negative way, just all the challenges regarding that. And I found that there's quite a bit about this, especially when it comes to the way that Jesus dealt with his disciples. And so I think this is going to be a helpful lesson if this is something you struggle with, or even if you don't struggle with it a lot. What we're going to find is digging into this, I think, helps us with our relationship with Jesus. And you'll see how, especially as we get to the end, how it all fits into that. So I think this is a real temptation of looking at the other person rather than focusing on the things I need to focus on. It may be in such a way as it's unfair that they have this and I don't have this, that kind of thing. Or it may be comparing it as in building myself up, a prideful kind of thing, of look at what I am compared to this other person. All those things can happen. So we're going to dig into all of those, particularly seeing how it plays out with Jesus' disciples there in the Gospels. So, first point, we've got a couple of different areas where you see this with the disciples. One is this constant competition between them. You notice this as you're reading through Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and you're looking at the way the disciples related to each other. It seems like there's a lot of competition going on. So turn your Bibles first over to the book of Luke chapter 9, and that's where we're going to be first. There's this constant, I don't know if it's bickering, but it's this wanting to be ahead of the other person. And I want to start with this little verse that I found in Ecclesiastes that I think captures it really well, that I'll just put on the screen here while you're turning to Luke. Ecclesiastes 4, verse 4, the writer of Ecclesiastes makes this observation. He says, "I have seen that every labor and every skill which is done is the result of rivalry between a person and his neighbor. This too is futility and striving after wind." So if you know much about the book of Ecclesiastes, you know that it's this guy just kind of looking at the world and saying, this is how it is, and noticing a lot of the negative things out there. And here he says, you know what I've noticed is that the thing that seems to really motivate everybody in this world, the thing that seems to just make this whole world go round, is rivalry. It's that I want to be better than you, so I'm going to work harder so that I can get something that you don't have, so I can achieve something that you haven't achieved. There's just this competition that seems to motivate everything. And you think about it, that is really true. That there is this competition that seems to fuel the economy, fuel the decisions we make in life, fuel what jobs we have. You know, it's interesting how if you're around people that kind of have all the same stuff you have and aren't a whole lot more wealthy than you or anything, then you feel like, yeah, I'm doing pretty well. But if you're living among a bunch of people where they're all so much more wealthy than you and you're the poorest one there, then you feel like, well, why me? Why don't I have that? There is this tendency to compare ourselves and turns into this rivalry. And the writer of Ecclesiastes says, that seems to motivate everything. That's why people work so hard. It's because they want what the other person has. All right, and you definitely see that with Jesus' disciples. So let's start by looking at that text, Luke 9, verse 46. Here's what the way Luke describes what's going on here. Verse 46, an argument arose among them as to which of them was the greatest. But Jesus, knowing the reasoning of their hearts, took a child and put him by his side and said to him, whoever receives this child in my name receives me. And whoever receives me receives him who sent me. For he who is least among you all is the one who is great. So he says this argument comes up. And the argument is, who's better than who? It's this rivalry. It's just comparing themselves to each other and saying, I'm better than this person. Now, why are they doing that? Why is there this competition? It seems like that's just human tendency, that we feel better about ourselves if we know that I'm at least better than that person. And Jesus turns it around and he says, actually, you're going the wrong direction. You need to lower yourself. All right, so this is one of the occasions when it happens. It's interesting that it doesn't stop here. After Jesus rebukes them at this point, they go on and they do it later on. And in fact, the one I want to jump to is at the very end, if you go over to Luke 22. So turn over there, Luke 22. This is at the Last Supper, right before Jesus is betrayed. And they're still dealing with this. I don't know how much time has passed at this point, but you think, here, I mean, Jesus is about to die, and he's instituting the Lord's Supper and everything, and at this point, they're still arguing among themselves about who's greater, who's better than the other person. So, here's the way this plays out. Verse 20 is where I'm going to start in verse 20, which is right at the end of him instituting the Lord's Supper. So verse 20, and likewise the cup, after they had eaten, saying, this cup that is poured out for you is the new covenant in my blood. But behold, the hand of him who betrays me is with me on the table. For the Son of Man goes as it has been determined, but woe to that man by whom he is betrayed. And they began to question one another, which of them it could be who is going to do this. So Jesus institutes the Lord's Supper, and then he says, one of you is going to betray me. One of you, just one. Not all of you are going to betray me, but just one of you is going to betray me. And what you have right there is then there's this inequality, that there's somebody's going to do the really bad thing. Who's it going to be? And then they start arguing and talking and, who's it? Is it going to be you? Is it going to be me? It's not going to be me. I know, it might be you, but it's not going to be me. And then it gets to the point that the very next verse, look at what it says. A dispute also arose among them as to which of them was to be regarded as the greatest. So now we're back to that again. Now we're back to exactly where they were. I'm better than you, and I'm better than you. Why? Why did it come up at this point? It seems like it's related to this, one of you is going to betray me. That once you have this inequality of, we know one person's bad one. Well, I know I'm not the bad one. It must be you that's the bad one. And then, and then you're back to the competition again. So I think one of the things that pushes us towards this competition is when we feel threatened. When we feel like someone's maybe pushing me down a little bit. Well, I know I'm not that. So then I push other people down. And this continues to play out throughout the meal. So this is when they're looking at each other. But I want to change this just a little bit. The next part I want to look at is not so much as far as the competition, but as far as our personal relationship to God. That actually can lead to this looking at each other as well. And so look at how this one plays out. If you turn over to the Gospel of Matthew now, we're in Matthew 26, so this is still at the Last Supper. But I'm going to jump over to Matthew because it gives us a different perspective of what happens here. They've just argued about who's the greatest and everything. And then Jesus is going to turn to them and tell them something else that's rather difficult. So Matthew 26, and there in verse 30, Jesus says, "And when they had sung a hymn and went out to the Mount of Olives, then Jesus said to them, 'You will all fall away because of me this night. For it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I am raised up, I will go before you to Galilee.'" So now Jesus tells him, everybody's going to fall away. He doesn't single it out as just, hey, there's just going to be this one person who betrays me. He already did that. Now he says, but all of you are going to fall away. Now here's what Peter says, verse 33. Peter answered him, "Though they all fall away because of you, I will never fall away." Jesus said to him, "Truly I tell you, this very night, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times." Peter said to him, "Even if I must die with you, I will not deny you." And all the disciples said the same. So here, again, it feels like this happens when Peter feels threatened. Jesus says, all of you are going to deny me. And Peter says, no. In fact, he pushes it further. He says, even if all of those deny you, I'm not going to deny you. So here's this comparison again. He could have just been like, Jesus, no, I'm not going to deny you. But he takes it one step further and says, I know I'm not going to deny you because I know that I'm better than these guys. If these guys deny you, maybe, but not me. I would not do that. Why? Why does he feel the need to compare himself? Why can't he just leave it with Jesus? I don't know what they're going to do, but here's what I'm working on with me personally. Why not that? It seems like a lot of times in a relationship with God, the easiest way to measure ourselves and to make ourselves feel better about ourselves is if I can see that I'm better than other people. I know I'm not perfect, but if I'm better than the people around me, well, then I'm a pretty good person. That if I'm starting to feel like, oh, I don't know if I'm that good. Well, if at least I'm better than them, then yeah, I think I'm pretty good. That's usually the way that works. You know, how do you measure how good of a person you are spiritually? I mean, none of us are perfect. We all sin. So how would you measure that ladder? Am I a 5, a 7, a 10? Am I down to the 3? Where am I? Well, one of the ways I think we mentally do it without even thinking about it is we compare ourselves to each other. And I think, well, I do this, and that person doesn't do that, and, you know, that person I know does this bad thing, and I don't do that bad thing, so, yeah, I'd say I'm pretty good. I think that's what Peter's doing here, that he's making himself feel more confident by pushing other people down. I know I'm at least stronger than the other disciples. Therefore, Jesus, you can't be talking to me. I know I'm going to be strong here. And that happens so often. I think the classic example of that is the Pharisee when he was praying. You remember that story that Jesus tells about the Pharisee who's praying and he says, God, I thank you that I'm not like other people. I thank you that I'm not like that tax collector over there. That as he's praying to God, the way that he feels better about his relationship to God is by complimenting himself, particularly complimenting himself to say, I know I'm better than this person. Such a temptation. But here's where that all falls apart. Turn over back to the book of Luke. Turn over to Luke 22 and verse 54. And the reason we're jumping back and forth is because that's the way the details that I'm looking for in these stories are only recorded in certain accounts. So Luke 22, verse 54. This this tells us about what happens, how Jesus' words are actually fulfilled here. So, verse 54. Then they seized him and led him away, bringing him into the high priest's house, and Peter was following at a distance. This is after Jesus has been arrested and he's being led off to trial. Verse 55, and when they had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and sat down together, Peter sat down among them. Then a servant girl, seeing him as he sat in the light and looking close at him, said, this man also was with him. But he denied it, saying, woman, I do not know him. And a little later, someone else saw him and said, you also are one of them. And Peter said, man, I am not. And after an interval of about an hour, still another insisted, saying, certainly this man also was with him, for he too is a Galilean. But Peter said, man, I do not know what you're talking about. And immediately, while he was still speaking, the rooster crowed. And the Lord turned and looked at Peter. And Peter remembered the saying of the Lord, how he had said to him, before the rooster crows today, you will deny me three times. And he went out, and he wept bitterly. That had to hurt Peter so much. What I think is interesting here is that moment. This is why I wanted to get it from Luke, because Luke's the only one that records this little detail. Jesus turns and looks at him. What did that feel like? It's just Peter and Jesus there. The other disciples, they're not there. It's just Peter and Jesus looking straight at him. And I think this becomes the cure for what we saw back in Matthew 26. This, I feel better about myself when I compare myself to other people. Once it's just me and Jesus, just me and my relationship with Jesus, then there's no one to hide behind. Then there's nobody to feel like, well, at least I'm better than them. There's nobody else. It's just me and Jesus. And I know I'm not as good as Jesus. And I know I failed Jesus. And all of a sudden, there's just complete transparency. And Peter sees himself as he really is. All right, well, fortunately, Jesus doesn't leave Peter here. If the lesson ended there, it'd be so discouraging. Don't compare yourself to anybody else. Just compare yourself to Jesus and see that you're a sinner. And the end. But that's not how it ends. What you have is the beautiful text over in John 21 that we read from our scripture reading. So turn over there. This is such a beautiful moment. After Peter has failed so badly, and after he built himself up and thought he was better than any of the other followers, and then Jesus exposes who he really is, and Peter's got to own that. And then Jesus comes right to Peter. So this is after Jesus dies and he's resurrected, and then Peter and the disciples go fishing, and then while they're fishing, there's this miraculous catch of fish, and they realize that's Jesus standing there on the beach, and Peter jumps in the water and swims over to Jesus, and he comes out and he's right there with Jesus, and it's just him and Jesus, and then we have this beautiful conversation. So it starts in verse 15. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, feed my lambs. All right, a couple of things that I like right at the beginning of this. One is Jesus singles Peter out. It's not the whole group here. It's just, they might have been standing there. We'll see, but it's just Jesus saying, Peter, let me talk to you. Just Peter and Jesus. But then Jesus does something strange. He says, do you love me more than these? What does he mean by that? People have tried to guess, and I don't know for sure, but here's what I really wonder if he means by love me more than these. Is he saying, Peter, do you love me more than these other disciples love me? Is he going back to the comparison that Peter made earlier? Maybe. I'd say that's pretty likely of what Jesus is doing here. He's taking him back. Peter, are you still trying to compare yourself to other people? All right, so in that, Jesus is changing Peter's focus. And I want, as we go through here, I want you to think about what is he trying to get Peter to focus on? He starts out with, maybe, Peter, you're thinking about other people. But then he says, Peter, do you love me? And Peter responds, yes, I love you, Jesus. But then he continues, he pushes him harder. So verse 16, he said to him a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He said, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, tend my sheep. So the first thing he really helps him focus on is just focus on loving me, Peter. Work on that. So really focusing just Jesus, just Peter. Let's just talk about our relationship here. And you feel Jesus' love for him and that he singles him out and he just talks to him. And then he's just pushing Peter. Peter, what about your relationship with me? Do you really love me? But then as each time that Peter says, yes, I do love you, then he turns and he says, tend my sheep, feed my sheep. And so in that, he focuses him on loving others. Now, loving others, of course, is the opposite of comparing ourselves to others. Comparing ourselves to others is where I feel like I'm better than you, and it actually gives me some sort of joy a little bit that you're doing worse than me. Whereas loving others is where if you're doing worse, then it gives me pain, and I want to lift you up. And that's where he's pushing Peter, this love towards Jesus, this love towards others. And then he says, verse 17, and he said to him the third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. He pushes Peter and pushes Peter to really, really focus in on this. Do you really love me, Peter? It's got to be about this relationship that you actually care about me, that it's not about all these other things and do you love me more than those? No, it's Peter, it's do you love me? All right, then he says, verse 18, truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. When you are old, you'll stretch out your hands, and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go. This he said to show what kind of death he was to glorify God. And after saying this, he said to him, follow me. He tells Peter, when you were young, you'd get yourself dressed and you'd just do whatever you wanted to do. You were in control of your own life and your situation, it felt like. But it's going to come a time when you're not in control anymore. Someone else is going to lead you where you don't want to go. And he says John interjects here that what he meant by that is he's going to die for Jesus. He's going to be bound, imprisoned, and led off to be killed. Now, that's got to be really hard to hear. What's interesting is that takes us back to that conversation where Peter says, even if I had to die with you, I would, Jesus. And Jesus is saying, you're right, Peter, you will. So in one sense, it's horrible to have that hanging over you. In another sense, it's, Peter, you're going to become the man who you wanted to be. I'm giving you the opportunity to become who you thought you were, who you've hoped to be. You're going to grow to that point. But here's how I'm describing focus. Focusing on Jesus' plans for his life. For his life. He says, here's the plan I've charted out for you, Peter. I've charted it all the way to the end, and in the end, you're going to die in this way that's just going to bring so much glory to God. Focusing in on Peter's individual specific path. It's interesting that Jesus had a plan for Peter's life. That Jesus had actually planned this out, that yes, at some point, Peter's going to be a martyr for me. What do you think about that? That Jesus would actually have a plan, that he would know the way that Peter was going to die. Does he know how everybody's going to die? Does he plan that out? He doesn't really say here, but he does say, Peter, here's the plan. Here's how the story's going to end. He's telling him that your life is telling this story, and let me just give you this little cheat here. The last page looks like this, Peter. How would you like it if Jesus did that for you? He said, I won't tell you the whole thing, but I'm going to tell you the very last page. Here's how the very end is going to look. I don't know, would that make you feel better or worse? It would focus you towards that goal, especially if it was a goal like this. To know I'm going to be strong enough to make it. It's going to be so hard. The end's going to be terrible. I'm dreading it, and yet I know that I'm going to do it for Jesus. It set him towards a goal, and that's what Peter needed, to be focused on that goal of this is the story that my life is telling for Christ. It's not about all those other people. It's my life is telling for Christ. And yet, look at how Peter responds.
And this is the final point on this. He looks at the unfair circumstances. And I think probably most of us would probably do this at this point. Jesus, you just told me about what my life is going to be like, and you just told me my life is going to be miserable. What about everybody else? And so here's what he says. Verse 20, Peter turned and saw the disciples, this disciple whom Jesus loved following them, the one who also had leaned back against him during the supper and had said, "Lord, who is it that is going to betray you?" When Peter saw him, he said to Jesus, "Lord, what about this man? What about that guy?" And now we're back to the comparison again. And before, it was a comparison of I'm better than these other people. Now, we've got a different kind of comparison. It's a comparison of why is my life worse than these other people? I think both are equally dangerous. One is pride, the other is envy. Both can get us. Both, I think, are a huge temptation for us in all sorts of circumstances. When I start to look around at my life and I feel like, it's not right, I'm going through this. Why don't they have to go through this? Why is it that they have this and this and this and this and this and I don't have any of that? Why would God be so unequal with that? Why would God put this huge burden on me and this person don't have to deal with those burdens? Why, God? And you know, it can grow to the point where we become angry with God and where we become resentful of everybody else. Resentful that they would have this, that they would somehow think they're better, that they can have all this stuff, and I don't have that. That my life is horrible and their life seems to be great. It gets to this point that it not only messes up our relationship with Christ, but it messes up our relationship with everybody else. And then you have Jesus' beautiful response. And this is really the whole reason I wanted to preach this sermon, was just this beautiful, beautiful answer right here at the end. Verse 22, Jesus said to him, "If it is my will that you remain until I come, what is that to you? You follow me." Break that down. If it is my will that you remain until I come, what is that to you? What Peter really needed to learn is that his relationship with Jesus had nothing to do with all these other people. If their lives were great, if their lives were terrible, if they were holy, if they were sinners, that had no bearing on who Peter was to Jesus. Jesus had singled out Peter and talked to him about, "Do you love me?" Showing Peter how much he loved Peter. He really emphasized, it's about our relationship, Peter, just you and I. And then he said, and I've got a plan for your life, Peter. You work on that plan. Your life is telling the story. And then when Peter starts to glance over and say, "But what about his story? What about her story? What about that? What is that to you?" That has no bearing on your story, Peter. And then he ends it with great words. "You follow me." He's saying, "Peter, all you really need in your relationship is just keep looking at me. When you see that those footprints go over there, you go over there. When you see the footprints go around the corner, you go around the corner. You just follow right where I'm leading, you go that way. You don't have to worry about where that person goes and if they take that turn or if I lead them in a different, no, you just follow them." All right, well, here's what I love so much about this. It's not only practical and helpful as far as this is something that I think we all struggle with at least a bit, and some of us more than others, but all of us at different times, I think we do struggle with this. But the other aspect of this is the way that seeing the solution, what it helps us with as far as our relationship with Christ. Thinking about how Christ has that plan, that story cut out for us. Like how he told Peter, you know, this is how the end is going to look. This is what you're going to do for me. This is my purpose that I'm going to be accomplishing through you. Thinking about my personal story for Christ. If I can focus on that, it may not look like your story. It may be radically different. It may, if we compare the two stories, we may say, well, those aren't really fair. It seems like there's some inequality there. Doesn't matter. What I need to do is focus on the story that Christ is telling for me right now. If we can each do that, then it brings so much joy. But there's all the stress of feeling like, well, what about that person? What about this person? All of that's gone. It's just about me and my relationship to Jesus. And that relationship is a truly beautiful one. One where, like, he explains to Peter how much he loves Peter, and it's about Peter's love to him. So I want to invite all of us to join in that relationship, to focus more just on Christ, to not be disturbed by the things around us, but to focus just on our relationship to him. Grow in that. What is that to you? You follow me. If you're subject to the invitation this morning, as far as if you're not a Christian yet and you want to begin following Christ, then we want to invite you to that. We want to invite you to give your life to him, repenting of your sins, believing in him, being baptized, and beginning that life of following the path that he's laid out for us. If you're subject to that invitation, then please come forward while together we stand and sing.